Amazon 5-Star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by Ed Helms. Tonight's review, Tactical Jacket. I was living a simple life. Didn't get out much. Then, I bought this jacket, and everything changed. Women came flocking to me from lands domestic and foreign. On the 245-day sailboat voyage home, I was attacked by a shark. I knew it was the jacket he was after. Giving up the jacket in exchange for my life. 5 stars. Amazon customer 69. Shop the perfect gift this holiday on Amazon.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
Astonishing Legends Network.
Listen to the Astonishing Junk Drawer exclusively at patreon.com/astonishinglegends.
Pandemonium, riots, LT hats
living together.
I am going to be fired by Forrest probably because we gave Ed the night off.
All this technology can be weaponized, and then we're talking about the ultimate weapon on the Earth.
And that was all tied to Bob Bigelow and Bigelow Aerospace. Highlighter and regular pen? I don't think so, Forrest. Yeah. I would know about it.
This upends everything. This breaks the world.
And what was allowed to be in the book is what he knows he can safely say.
Did you ask it if it believes in aliens?
Astonishing Legends would like to thank Hims, First Leaf, BetterHelp, Squarespace, our contributors at patreon.com, and you, our listeners, for making tonight's show possible.
In just 2 days, on December 16th, 2024, documentary filmmaker James Fox will release his latest groundbreaking work, The Program. We first mentioned Fox on our show back in 2020, but he's been a prolific documentary filmmaker since 2003, well before we even got started. His first film, Out of the Blue, caught the attention of the UFO and UAP community immediately. He followed that project with I Know What I Saw, which we had the good fortune of a listener bringing to our attention years ago. In this film, James talks to several high-profile witnesses and further thrusts the UAP phenomena into the mainstream. Then, almost exactly 7 years ago, in 2017, the New York Times published its famous front-page above-the-fold article titled Glowing Auras and Black Money, The Pentagon's Mysterious UFO Program. At that point, the mainstream media effectively pushed the world at large into the deep end of the UAP pool, and a few weeks later, Astonishing Legends published a two-part series based on that article that we called Imminent Disclosure, with a question mark at the end of it. We thought maybe something was finally about to happen. In the intervening time, Mr. Fox continued tilting at the disclosure windmills by producing two of his most poignant works to date, 2020's The Phenomenon and 2022's Moment of Contact. The Phenomenon examines 70 years of government UFO investigations, featuring interviews with figures like former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. It explored historical cases such as the 1561 Nuremberg incident and delved into Project Blue Book and the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, which was introduced to the world in that New York Times article. Moment of Contact investigated the 1996 Varginha, Brazil UFO crash. One of the most compelling eyewitness accounts of alien beings in human history, and Fox's team leaves no stone unturned while looking into the veracity of what happened, talking to eyewitnesses, and even risking their lives to get the story. Now, with The Program, Fox goes behind recent UAP hearings, speaking with congresspersons and military officials about a truth that can no longer be ignored. The film suggests that disclosure may now be inevitable, regardless of the official stance. Folks, we have seen this film, and it is eye-opening. Tonight, we sit down with James Fox to discuss his remarkable career, his latest film, and his thoughts on the future of UFO-UAP disclosure.
Welcome
Welcome back to Astonishing Legends. I'm Scott Philbrook, and this is Forrest Burgess.
He's speaking a language I don't know, but I'm understanding every word he says. U.S. Air Force Master Sergeant Jason Sands to James Fox in The Program.
Join us tonight as we discuss James Fox's latest documentary, The Program, and where he thinks disclosure is going next.
And we're back.
That we are, folks. 2024 is coming to a close, and we're super excited about tonight's show, so we'll keep this very brief. This is our second-to-last show of the year. Our last one will be the fifth year of the Astonishing All-Star Holiday Party with our returning guests, Paul Gledhill, Micah Hanks, Jim Harold, Richard Haddam, Allison Joynland, Tess Feifel, Ed Vicola, Chris Kulari, and Miranda Merrick.
And not only is it the fifth All-Star Holiday Special, it's also our 300th episode of Astonishing Legends. Well, we couldn't have planned that.
We timed it out that way.
Well, no matter what number it is, it's going to be a blast because it always is. So whip up some eggnog or hot chocolate and sit down by the fire and join us. And that show will drop on December 23rd, 2024.
I can't wait. Well, we set James up pretty well in the cold open and we can't wait to talk to him. So let's dive into our discussion.
Welcome to the show, Mr. Fox.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
We've been fans of yours for a long time, but I just was gobsmacked with Moment of Contact. I've seen it three times. I'll probably watch it again this weekend. I was, when it came out, I was like, we gotta get this guy, but I could not figure out how to get in touch with you.
We had to wait for a new production.
So we were so glad to hear from your publicist that, you know, would you be willing to come on? So we're just so glad that you're here. And also the program is just amazing. Your back catalog is amazing. The work you're doing is so cool. So why don't we start a little bit with a little bit of that background? I mean, you've made a lot of films and a lot of them have been focused on the UAP, but you also did the one on the Deepwater Horizon, which I have not seen, but that incident obviously is a standout thing in my mind. What brought you into documentary filmmaking and specifically what bent you so far towards UAP?
Oh, well, thanks for the intro. I was going to say I've had my life threatened on two different film projects. And one of them was with Deepwater Horizon. It's called Pretty Slick. And I had the guy ahead of fisheries. It was either all of Alabama or Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi. But he was head of the fisheries. And he had photographic evidence of the fish that had been swimming around and the corexit and oil that BP was sinking into the ocean, into the Gulf, showing these abscesses and abnormal growths and just, oh, man.
Yeah.
And he said to me, "You reveal my identity, boy, I'll hunt you down and split your throat. Do we have an understanding?" I said, "Yes, sir." We do. This guy was not kidding.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God. He was cool, but he was letting me know, like, this is not a joke. Like, yeah. You reveal my identity and there are going to be serious consequences.
Wow.
And making Moment of Contact, I probably came as close as ever as getting shot right in the face.
Well, that one's on film. That moment is just, yeah, that is just startling. And I want to focus on the program tonight, but before we finish, and if we manage our time properly, I do have a couple of questions about Varginha. So, but yeah.
Anyway.
That was scary when you went out there, when you guys went out there, your whole crew and everything.
In retrospect, I'm looking over at the audio guy, who obviously is Portuguese. He understood. He had headphones. And he had the boom mic.
Yeah.
And you could see him in the production kind of step behind the wall a little bit. Because he knows exactly what's being said.
Right, right.
Nobody's telling me.
Yeah. You're like, wait, where's he going?
Bullets are going to start flying. Yeah, it was pretty nuts.
Well, before we go a little further, now, obviously, Forrest and I have seen it, but why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the program and what it's about?
I did The Phenomenon, right?
Yes.
The Phenomenon touched on crash materials, touched on lightly Roswell, and there's some discussion among Christopher Mellon that if we had such materials that they're tucked away, hidden, blah, blah, blah. So in the fact that Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said, what's been revealed is only the tip of the iceberg. Everything else has been, the vast majority of evidence hasn't seen the light of day, right? So you kind of left off there. And then naturally, I think the program would have followed The Phenomenon, but I paused and went back to that crash retrieval case, which a lot of people were trying to discourage me from doing because I went from having unprecedented, first time ever access to members of, you know, the Senate and politicians and intel people. And people were very concerned that I was going to tarnish my reputation by focusing in on a case where allegedly live aliens are running through the town and getting captured. And it's just too crazy, right?
Yes.
Like, I remember making that decision like, well, I'm going to put my 25 plus year reputation on the line for this because I really believe the witnesses that I've met with personally, right?
Right.
So by the time I got around to the program, this current production, there had been a lot that had happened from when I'd finished The Phenomenon to producing Moment of Contact, that two-year gap. I was pretty much super focused on getting the Moment of Contact completed and out into the world. And it was particularly challenging because I've never done a film in a foreign language, right?
Right.
And I remember my distributor at the time, which ended up ripping me off blind, they were very concerned about, you know, a foreign language. Americans don't like to read subtitles. I don't like to read subtitles. So I remember having that in the back of my mind, like really focusing on getting in the field and speaking as much English as I possibly could, translated, blah, blah, blah. So by the time I came around to producing the program, I was having to play a little bit of catch up because a lot had gone down. Legislation, we were on the eve of the first congressional hearing in over 50 years with Andre Carson. And there was all this legislation that was written, the NDAA for 2022-2023 that was signed. And talking about crash retrievals and, you know, the legacy program stuff. I mean, wow, you know, right there in black and white.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a personal journey for me in the sense that I left off with The Phenomenon. I delved into a crash retrieval thing where I discovered at the 11th hour that the Americans were involved because the flight control officer, you know, had come forward while the last visit I was in filming in Brazil. He came in and revealed the fact that he saw the USAF, the United States Air Force plane, come in without Brazilian government authorization and land in Campinas.
Right.
Two helicopters get out, fly to Virginia, put some stuff in there, back, load the plane, back to the United States. Right. It's like, wow. So the United States was involved. So when I started the program and all this stuff is happening, it's like, wow, this is directly related to crash retrieval.
Right.
They're talking about legacy program. They're talking about crash retrieval. They're talking about reverse engineering. So this is right up my alley, like, you know. And then 6 months, 5 months after the film came out, you had the congressional hearing with David Grush testifying as to there being a crash retrieval program. So it was very personal to me, right? So I really wanted to capture that moment in history and make it, condense it in a way that the mainstream folks could really digest what's been going on and how we got to where we are today, right? Because if you know nothing about crash retrieval or very little about Roswell, David Grush is going to come and testify in open congressional hearings under oath, and your mainstream media, you're going to look at that and go, yeah, this is crazy, right?
Right.
Because you don't really have the background to understand like how we got there.
Right.
I mean, it was tough even for me to kind of somewhat process because got this high-level intelligence officer who's testifying under oath and revealing some stuff that's like, whoa, this is incredible, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, it was a personal investigation. It was me in the field trying to understand what was happening behind the scenes, in front of the scenes. I was learning as I was going along.
When you produce something like this, I know you're talking to so many congresspersons and military officials who are obviously having, and also private sector scientists like Dr. Nolan, who have all these concerns, these clearance concerns. Do you have to worry about that? Like when you're producing this, do you have to submit it or anything? Or it's just all on your interview subjects to be on their toes about that stuff?
This is probably the first time. I mean, obviously there was some sensitive stuff in a Moment of Contact, but that primarily was either hidden by not revealing the identity of the individual. But this is probably the first production I've done where I've learned things that I cannot talk about publicly at all.
Right.
I can't even, I remember at one point asking this individual, can I even say that I heard it from, no, you cannot do that. So I feel incredibly privileged that I've gotten some information. From the fact that I can't share it, it doesn't make it that great, you know, but.
And that was a great question that you asked. You were like, does it make you uncomfortable? I can't remember you asked Dr. Nolan that or somebody, does it make you uncomfortable to know these things you can't tell us? And this would, that you just answered a question that I also had down here for you was like, now are you that person? If you becoming that person, I have to be envious. You know, we're acquainted with Jeremy Corbell as well. And every time I'm ever texting with him or what, I'm just like, God, I wish I knew what he knew. And now I'm wishing I knew what you knew. And that's the next thing is, how is it they can tell you? I get that you can't say it publicly, but why don't they get in trouble even for just relaying it to another person who doesn't have
parents? Well, I'm sure they probably would.
Okay. Because it's a secret, basically.
I'm sure they would. I mean, I had one individual say, I just violated XYZ. Like, this is real. I mean, it's stuff that I kind of suspected, right? But it's details to cases that I'd heard that was what really got me.
Yeah.
The details to some cases that, you know, these individuals had seen firsthand was a little shocking for me, right?
Yeah.
As I like one thing to kind of suspect it or uncover certain things in the field, right? I've been investigating Roswell on and off over the decades.
The Zamora incident too, right?
Great case. Yeah. You know, great case. Yeah. I'm convinced that that Lonnie, one of my biggest regrets, I didn't get to him before he died.
Yeah.
He died in like 2008. And I was in his neck of the woods in 2007. But I didn't know. Yeah, I think he had some sort of telepathic communication when he made eye contact with one of those creatures. But anyway, I digress. But, yeah.
Well, in a follow-up question, there seems to be levels of knowledge and belief with this throughout the whole spectrum here. And is there a point, though, are you glad that you have found out the details that you have? And then do you think that there's a level where you don't want to know, like a lot of folks?
Gosh, you know, I do want to know, even if it's scary. Yeah. I do want to know. Somebody was just telling me the other day that I was like, well, how many people do you think on the planet have the bigger picture?
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody has the whole picture, but this individual is like, I would say under 20.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
They seemed pretty confident about it, you know? And then all that this individual said was that it was a little scary. I wish I would have pried a little harder to know what's scary.
Yeah.
Are we someone's petri dish? Who knows? I don't know. I mean, I'd like to know.
Right. It's a question of which lab are we in?
Are
we in the lab where they're torturing them, or are we in the lab where they're just trying to keep us alive and happy and observe us, you know?
Are they walking among us, you know? I mean, I've had people that seem to be in a position to know that told me that unequivocally, and one of those people was he didn't tell me not to talk about it. It was Robert Bigelow.
Bigelow, yeah. I have questions about him too as well. So,
and look, you know, are people feeding me disinformation? Maybe they are.
Right, right.
I have to be open to that too.
So are you one of those folks who stores your phone, wallet, and keys and all that kind of stuff by the front door so you can grab it on the way out?
Well, I was, but now for security reasons, I'll be moving it somewhere else.
Oh, you see, is there a mirror too?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You got to take last looks, as they say in the film business, before you head out.
Oh, yes, I'm familiar with last looks and just make sure everything's right and in place. And it's one of those, probably it was one of those fancy things with the mirror and you hang your coat and all that stuff with the shoes.
No, I don't have that much, but there is a mirror, like, and you always got to make that decision. Is it going to be horizontal or is it going to be vertical so you can do the full body check?
I see.
This is just kind of a horizontal one there, like you can glance at yourself as you walk out the door.
Yeah. Well, of course. And I was really just kind of talking about the upper portion, you know, where your collar's right and your hair isn't messed up.
Well, yeah, the hair, as far as hair goes, that sounds like a you problem.
Oh,
you've got great hair, man.
Oh, well, you
do. Every time we sign on to record, I'm jealous, but mine has gone over the horizon, but I'm okay with it. I make up for it with the ability to grow an epic beard in about 10 minutes.
that's true. It is strangely epic and weird, but no, I wouldn't say that. Thank you so much, though. Anyway, I know it's not a big deal for you, but you know, a lot of dudes, it is a big deal. It can really mess with your confidence. So for some folks, it's the worst.
Yeah, it can. But you know what's changing the game for guys like me? And I mean ones that look like me. Hims. Oh, Hims makes treating hair loss super simple. They've got doctor-trusted, clinically proven options like finasteride and minoxidil that can actually help regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, no kidding there. You know, that's not very long at all. I'm guessing it's all from the comfort of your couch, right?
Exactly. You just answer a few questions online and a medical provider will determine if the treatment is right for you. If so, they'll ship it right to your door. It's all 100% online. No awkward doctor visits required.
Yeah, sounds pretty sweet, don't it? And I'm assuming you don't need any insurance for this either.
Nope, not at all. One low price covers everything from the treatments to the ongoing care. Plus, Hims has hundreds of thousands of happy subscribers already.
Well, there you go. Color Us Impressed. I know Scott and I are. So how can listeners get started with HIMS?
Well, you just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you in discreet packaging for free.
So there are serums and different formulations depending on what you want, right?
Yeah, you can totally choose from personalized chewables, oral spray, and serum treatments, and you just kind of check them all out and figure out what works best for you.
Ah, very cool. Well, it sounds like HIMS has every angle figured out depending on what you need. And how do our listeners get on board now?
It's easy. Just head to HIMS.com/AL to start your free online visit. That's HIMS.com/AL.
HIMS.com/AL. Got it.
Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Well, winter is here, to make an outdated reference to Game of Thrones or something.
I think that was, wasn't it? Winter is coming.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It also sounds way better when you do it. Well, I don't really know, but it's cold and the days are shorter. And now more than ever, I'm in need of a little treat, which is why I joined First Leaf, a wine club that delivers my favorite types of wine right to my door, because a glass of delicious wine is one of the best treats of all.
Boy, it really is, especially this time of year. You know, First Leaf is great because it gets to know your specific preferences, whether you like red, white, sweet, or dry. So in every shipment, you get to unbox a new selection of bottles you're guaranteed to love, which is half the fun. And to get started, all you have to do is answer a few quick questions about what you like to drink.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts about my First Leaf subscription is how easy it is to control my delivery schedule. I get to choose when my wine ships, so I always have bottles on hand for hosting friends and holiday gatherings. In fact, this week, I got some great stuff.
Ooh, do tell.
Well, I got six amazing bottles, but two of my favorites are the Sir Oscar Darby 2021 Chardonnay from Southeastern Australia, which I might remind you is where the Trump family is from, from our last episode.
That's right.
And I happen to know that's a very good growing region now. So, and then on top of that, I got a really nice Chenin Blanc from Paarl, South Africa, called Wilderidge Veld. It's from 2022. They were both delicious.
Ooh, sounds fancy and delicious and terrific. Well, you know, I've got another box on the way myself just in time for the holidays to get me through them.
And if you join First Leaf and you get a bottle that you don't absolutely love, it's not a problem because First Leaf has a 100% satisfaction guarantee.
So go ahead and treat yourself with wines from First Leaf. Go to tryfirstleaf.com/astonishing to sign up, and you'll get your first six handpicked bottles for just $44.95.
That's tryfirstleaf.com/astonishing. tryfirstleaf.com/astonishing.
Hi, I'm Marty, and you're listening to Astonishing Legends with Scott Philbrook and Forrest Burgess. Now, back to the show.
Do you think that, because I kind of feel this way, is that the wooist of the woo information is out there in various forms, and it's up to the individual to believe it or not. But do you think then that the big picture has already mostly been spilled, or it's out there, and it's just not accepted by most? Because some of it is pretty upsetting and disturbing and wrecks the world, or potentially. And do you think it's out there, but we just choose not to believe it? And then, I mean, what else could there be? I mean, how much more mind-blowing could some of this stuff be?
Yeah, you know, I've heard so many stories over the decades, you know, they're walking among us, you know, stranger in the Pentagon, like, we made contact, we've been infiltrated, they're living underground, there's reptilians, there's these, there's those. It's like, okay, well, one of the things that I've grown to accept, and that is, don't make a quick judgment just because something sounds so outlandish. I've done that many times where I've completely dismissed stuff. Case in point, Rua, Virginia, even Socorro. You know?
Yeah. In moment of contact, I seem to remember you were like, I had skeptical moments about this until you got there.
I had skeptical moments for a decade on that case.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I was like, this is impossible. There's no way aliens could be walking around a town in broad daylight and like the whole world not know about it.
Right, right. It is my favorite to date film about that kind of encounter, honestly.
That's a really good case, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, you know, fascinating.
I remember when I finished the film, one of my old co-producers out of the blue, this guy, Tim Coleman, we were kicking around. I always draft broad strokes with, all right, what are our objectives going to be with this next film project? Very early on, like, hey, what about this case? What about that? We're kicking around for out of the blue. And he goes, oh, mate, he's British. Oh, mate, this is case in Brazil. It's absolutely phenomenal. This UFO crashing, these aliens walking around the town. I looked at him and I thought, I picked the wrong partner. I really did. I
was right. Like, you were like, oh, this guy's too far.
This guy's a nut job. And I just was like, over my dead body, we're going to cover that case. No way. And I completely denied him.
Yeah.
Fast forward 10, 15, whatever years it was. Yeah, maybe 20. I don't know.
Yeah.
He calls me up. He's like, bloody hell, mate. I told you about that case in the 90s. And I said, yes, I did. He goes, and you bloody well didn't believe me. I said, no, I did not.
Yeah.
But I apologize. I said, I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you a special thanks in the credits. I gave a special thanks.
And he hung up on you.
No, he was happy. You know, okay, good. He's happy, but, yeah. But you know.
Do you think that works to their favor, the gatekeepers, and that some of this is so crazy that they don't really have to worry about it getting out there because it's just unbelievable and most people won't? And you're going to have to make it stuff anyway.
Well, they're controlling that stigma.
Hey, look, I remember when I was 18, I dated this girl named Rachel Miller. She was 19. And she's like, oh, my previous boyfriend was really into UFOs. And I was like, why would you date a guy who's into UFOs? What? What? And I remember my opinion of her just sank. Like,
right.
Really, like, God. I mean, I had a really hard time letting that one go. I just tried to put it out of my mind that she dated a guy into UFOs. Like, what? And why was I programmed to think that way? Why wouldn't I have just been curious, like, oh, really? Well, what was he interested in? Are there any particular cases? Or, nope, just cut it right off.
Well, yeah. It's guilt by association. And as you were saying, I think before we started rolling, that you get a lot of flack just having talked to certain people because, and it even doesn't have to do with the UFO case. It could be political or spiritual, religious, some aspect of their personality. Other people don't like. It's like, oh, you talked to so-and-so? Well, yeah, why'd you do that? And then your credibility shot.
I mention one person or I hug that person or I include this other person or I go on this show or I go on Fox or I go on CNN. I get flack from everybody all the time. And I'm sorry, like, you know, we need to work together, put down our differences, focus on a common objective. We're stronger together than we are divided.
Well, that brings to mind something I wanted to ask you about. And I think that's a really valid point. By the way, there's so much value in you going on all these different platforms, regardless of where people are at with them, because I think that gets the message out wider, which is what needs to happen.
Absolutely. And it's a nonpartisan issue.
Exactly. That was the next thing I was going to say. And one of the things that is so clear from the program, and people, there's people that aren't really paying attention here, because I watched the most recent hearing live on whatever feed it was on YouTube. I can't remember if it was through C-SPAN or whatever. At the height of it being on, and this is the one where they're talking about Immaculate Constellation and all that stuff, there was 16,000 people watching. And I was just like, where is everybody? And so it seems like a lot of folks, even ones that are like tangentially interested in this, they're just waiting for the headline to be summed up by whatever mainstream news source that they're into. But it's crazy to me that the whole world isn't watching those hearings. But then on top of that, the other thing that's super obvious and very obvious in the program is the bipartisan nature of everyone in Congress who's trying to get to the bottom of this. And it's not just people in the middle. It's like far, far left folks and far, far right folks. You got Adam Schiff over here. You got Burchett on the other. Couldn't be two more different politicians. They are right down the middle on this, along with all the other ones at the hearing, like Nancy Mace, and everybody is involved. And it's crazy to me that as divided as the country is right now politically, that more people aren't paying attention to that.
It's fantastic. And I love that. I mean, Tim Burchett, whatever side of the fence you're on, that guy is solid. He oozes credibility and honesty. And he's, I love the guy. You can't not love him. It's like Bernie Sanders.
Right.
I even have people on the far right, like, I don't care, man. Bernie Sanders, far left, love the guy. He's a solid. I get a good vibe from that guy.
Right.
Same thing with Tim Burchett. Tim Burchett is one of the nice, most wholesome politicians I've ever met. Love being with the guy. We went in for a second interview. Congress got out early. I got a message from one of his handlers, and they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to have to go ahead and postpone the interview because of X, Y, and Z, and he's going to fly back to Tennessee. I was like, gosh, I drove all the way.
Yeah.
Here, I got the whole camera crew. I hired this guy, and she goes, oh my gosh, all right, let me talk to him. He stays in his office till after 10 p.m. at night just to meet with me and make good on his commitment to give me that interview.
Oh, wow.
Finish the interview, 10 o'clock at night. The guy's probably up for 16 hours.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
10 o'clock at night. And then he's got this skateboard that he had made for part of a, he made it by hand and he was going to auction it off for his campaign fund. At the end, he goes, well, let's go try the skateboard out. I was like, now? He goes, yeah, come on. So we take the skateboard out in the halls of Congress and we're both riding the skateboard.
No way.
I was like, this has got to be the coolest thing I've ever done. I'm riding the skateboard.
That's amazing.
It was really cool. I got video of it. I'll probably release it at some point, provided he's okay with it.
Yeah.
We got fun.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Really nice, genuine guy. Really nice guy.
And following that, yeah, it's that. Well, first of all, we've been waiting a long time to talk with you. And one of the reasons is that Scott and I have come to learn, you know, the past 15, 20 years in this genre and in this field, you really start to learn that it's a lot of it's personality driven and personality based on what you're going to believe, who you give credibility to, who could lose credibility. And there are a few notable figures who've kind of risen above that, and I would say are a little bit beyond reproach. And one of them is yourself, sir. And there's a few other people, George Knapp, and they seem to, yeah, they get some criticism here and there, and people don't disagree, but they're not really, their baby's not thrown out with the bathwater of their ideas.
Lord knows I've made some stupid mistakes over the years.
Well, certainly. But I think, what do you think is it about your approach and the way you tackle and handle these subjects and how you interview people and what the finished product is like that keeps you on that level where people don't really mess with you, as Scott was saying? They just, you're given a lot of free rein to put this stuff out there without, because there are so many other controversial figures, as we know, where they'll come up with their ideas and it's basically, the message is good, the messenger is flawed. So what is it about your approach you think that has kept you on this level of credibility?
Well, I appreciate that. I would say one thing is that for the 80% of my so-called career in making these documentaries, I would have made more flipping burgers.
Yeah.
Well, really, if you calculate the amount of time, you know, parking cars, painting houses, doing construction work, working at hotels, just to keep it going, doing what I love, because I'm just really curious, you know, and I do it for free. Like, I, matter of fact, I worked jobs just to do this, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't ever about the money for me. I just thought that, wow, there's a real story here and that we all have a right to know what's going on, myself included. I'm also kind of skeptical too. I don't just believe things because someone says it. I really will dig into a story. I've dug into Roswell, dug into Virginia, dug into Socorro, Rua, you know, a number of the cases that I personally investigated, the Phoenix Lights. I always think of like the skeptic in the seat, you know. I'm not trying to prove one way or the other, you know, because you can't, right? I can't prove that Virginia happened because I don't have the bodies and I don't have the craft. I can't prove that Roswell happened. I can't prove that Rua, Zimbabwe, the landing school and aerial school in 1994. But I can't put together a pretty solid case to sway a jury that something truly inexplicable did take place. So I try to like think about it. I try to approach this topic with that regard and try to keep an open mind, try to provide a platform to allow the people that were there, not the people that were not there, the people that were there to say what they saw.
Right.
And try not to draw any definitive conclusions myself. That's a formula that I've been applying to my films for since I started. And I think that's a formula that has worked for me.
Right.
And anybody who says they know everything that's going on, I find that hard to believe.
Yeah.
Because the more I know, the more I realize I don't know.
When everything is so compartmentalized and siloed and whatever.
I know like less you said, today than I did 30 years ago.
Yeah, I know. There's always more questions.
Yeah. As we say, you hopefully learn to ask better questions.
There's that too.
On your knowledge. So, but I would say that sounds a lot like the approach of Art Bell and why he was so beloved is that he presented, he was curious, he let people tell their stories, but he kept an even keel with it. I think it was easier to stick with him when he doesn't go off and takes a huge detour. But then again, we've seen people that we know and trust that at some point have had to take that detour to stay true to themselves. And you know you're going to lose followers. You're going to lose some interest, but you seem to have maintained that.
I'm going to take a hit on this film. I know people are going to question why I included Jason Sands. There's a lot of stuff that I did behind the scenes.
That was my favorite segment.
Yeah, I thought very carefully about it. You know, I knew that people were going to give me, I know that Mick West is going to come after me. Of course he is, rightfully so.
Right.
Right, that's what he does.
Right.
And I can't prove that it happened.
Right.
However, I did as much due diligence as I could possibly do. I got the names of the other witnesses, reached out to them, had a result.
That were with Sergeant Sands? Because he mentioned the woman in the seat and then a gentleman in the back, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I got all their names.
Yeah.
I reached out through an intel guy that will remain nameless that found the person that allegedly debriefed all of them right after the incident.
Oh, wow.
That individual was not willing to confirm or deny on or off the record, which was frustrating.
Right.
But that individual didn't say, hey, it didn't happen, or you're chasing the wrong, You know, we got the leaked video from 3 days prior, right? So we have a location.
Okay.
Date.
I'm so glad you said that. So this is a question I want to ask. Firstly, I had a question I meant to ask you before we started rolling, but it's obviously okay, was if we could talk about that incident, because we don't want to spoil anything that, you know, the next question I had was about that footage, because we, for folks that are watching or listening to us, we got the screener just the day before we're talking to James here. So we only had a chance to watch it once. And normally I would have watched it many more times. One of my questions was after watching it was whether or not that footage was closely correlated with the actual incident that Sergeant Sands mentioned. And maybe just briefly, you could tell our listeners what Sergeant Sands contends.
So what we do know that could be proved in a court of law is that there was an unknown object flying it in and around Nellis Test Range in the winter of 1994. An unknown object was picked up via camera, their radar camera, and filmed. And you hear the chatter, I don't know, at least 4, 5, 6 people. What the hell are we looking at? What is that object? Totally unidentified and unknown. That leaked out. We got our hands on that. 3 days later, Jason Sands, who's stationed nearby, we mentioned the whole thing in the film, is in a convoy on their way out to the range with Nellis Test Range. They weren't actually, I don't think they were inside Area 51 at the time, but they were on their way.
Right.
They describe an encounter with an object it matched the description of what they'd filmed just a couple days earlier. And they had a close, he reported on a close encounter of the third kind. But he didn't say it was a blue alien. It was like, I saw this guy. I thought he was suffering from frostbite or some medical condition.
And right, because his skin was pale.
Medical attention.
Yeah.
Didn't know what it was. And then when he got right up on it, my God, one of the people in the car screamed, he's got no ears. What am I looking at here? And he just describes the account. And we did the best we could to verify it. But look, again, I'm hoping that by reporting on this in the way that we did, that other people will come forward.
Folks need to see the film because that's a really interesting account to see and to hear him talk about. One of the most interesting things about that is the implication, because this being that he encountered, in addition to communicating with him verbally in a language he didn't understand, he understood it in his head, which is fascinating. But the other thing was that it was in a uniform, which implied that there was some sort of cooperation possibly going on between this being and the military, right?
Or that was the image that he was projecting them to see.
Right.
Good because point. One of the things that he described that he said didn't make any sense is that the uniform, after watching him run through the desert, didn't have a speck of dust on it anywhere.
Yes.
And his shoes were completely still shiny. Shoes were
completely shiny and clean, yeah. And everyone went into a state of trance.
Yeah.
Where they just were, I'm not stating it as fact. I can say that Jason Sands' credentials checked out. Mm-hmm. He is who he says he is. I got military photographs of him doing what he says he was doing, where he says he was doing it, his military papers. And all the people that I spoke to internally said that the guy checks out. And he named secret program names that were highly classified, and he verified those. So,
how has he managed to stay out of trouble in telling that story?
Here's what happened. He was going to tell it anonymously. He hadn't gone through the process called DOPSR. I can't remember what that acronym stands for. It's basically pre-publication of, if you're going to write a book or something. So he hadn't done that. He had gone in and met with congressional staffers and the like for I think they hunted him down as part of the UAP task force, or maybe it was Arrow. And he had told his story behind the scenes. He was concerned about his safety and well-being. And I met with him through Christopher Mellon in D.C. And I, after having a couple of dinners with him, I said, look, if you're concerned, I'd be willing to put you on camera and we won't release it until you're ready, until you've gone through whatever process you need to go through to get to be able to come forward. And he's like, you know what? I would like that. So if anything happens to me, it's sort of an insurance policy. So he came and sat down. We did an interview with him primarily, you know, from the back. But I had one camera on his face just in case. I don't know, 6 months, 8 months later, I'm constantly posting updates on X at James C. Fox. Just updates the film, how things are going. And I posted a production still, and it had a clipboard in it. And that clipboard had Jay Sands written on it. And if you zoomed in, you could see it. And so I accidentally revealed his identity. And all hell was breaking loose. Oh, my God. And I was getting contacted by people on Signal. What the hell? This is like, you're really hurting this guy. I was like, my God, I'll take the post down. And that was it. He was out. And there was all sorts of stuff going on behind the scenes on, you know, on Twitter and or X, or I say. And I guess, I don't know, a couple weeks went by and he decided to kind of set the record straight and come forward, which he did. But that was on me. It was all my fault. But that caused him to apply through Dopser for permission to broadcast certain aspects of what he can and cannot reveal. And months went by. The process took a long time. And they basically came back and said, you can talk about this, this, and this, but you can't mention this one particular thing. So during the interview, I had mandatory, I had to blurp out where
yes,
he worked,
which you did, yeah.
Which right. I had to do it. Right. So I beeped it out. Right. And everything else got approved by Dopser. And so there it is.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. And during the holiday season, you hear a lot of talk about keeping cozy and comfortable. Mm-hmm. So what keeps you warm and fuzzy this time of year, sir?
Well, Indeed, keeping it cozy with a K is on everyone's minds during the winter months. And for myself, like a lot of folks, I suppose, hot beverages and warm slippers are paramount. And I know this may sound corny, but I try to apply what I call an emotional force multiplier to any cozy feelings by trying to remember to be thankful I have a warm, dry, and comfy place to sleep. You know, hot food, that sort of thing, because so many folks don't. But I also have a theory on why we look for extra comfort during the holidays.
Oh, man, here we go again. You know, I wasn't asking for a philosophical dissertation.
No, I'm not going to give you one. But then again, I might because that's what I do. Okay, quickly. Yeah, because it's cold outside, because it's dark at 3:45 p.m., because you haven't seen the sun in a couple of weeks, and because the holidays can bring a lot of tension, stress, and anxiety when dealing with other people. I think it's instinctive we consciously or subconsciously gravitate towards self-soothing coping mechanisms.
All right, Carl Jung, I'll go along with that a little.
Oh, okay.
And I get you, especially the holiday social anxiety part. And some hot cocoa, watching a holiday movie or playing a board game with the family can really help ease tensions and create fond memories. But those things only last a little while, and then you can be back to distress. So one process that can bring you some comfort that never goes away is therapy.
Yeah, that's right. You know, yeah, I like to bask in a cherished holiday sense memory from childhood or appreciate the way the sky looks pink at night after a snowfall. But those things are fleeting. Therapy, on the other hand, can offer a set of skills and strategies that will soothe and get you internally cozy all through the year and for the rest of your life.
Yep, your own Linus blanket for your mind, which therapy with BetterHelp can help give you.
Yeah, and give to you conveniently because BetterHelp is entirely online and suited to your schedule, so it's there when you need it.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Find comfort this December with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/astonishing today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/astonishing.
This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace.
We always talk about how Squarespace can enable anyone to build a gorgeous website that's perfect for your business or whatever entrepreneurial endeavor you got going on, and how Squarespace can help you sell anything from products to content to your time, whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand.
And all that's true, but we only probably talk about, oh, maybe once a year, is that you can have your very own website for any reason. It doesn't have to be business or content creator oriented.
That's right. Your Squarespace website can act like an online family scrapbook or album. Upload photos, audios, videos, whatever you have, like family historical documents and genealogy records, and a blog with family stories, old and new, that will be there for posterity and generations to come.
Wow, you know, that's really a great idea, especially for the genealogy documents. You know, you can have a more public section for friends and acquaintances, and then a gated member area section for just close relatives.
Yeah, that's right, folks. We're not saying you got to go out there and overshare your entire family background.
Some people might.
You can choose. You can choose what people see and what they don't see. So start by getting your personalized domain name with Squarespace Domains. Choose from millions of URLs and get world-class management tools included. And then rest easy knowing that with every purchase, Squarespace includes premium privacy and security features so your domain connection remains online and completely secure.
Yeah, and I guess that if you're sharing family and friends moments, you're doing that with social media and maybe having to post to several different platforms and or repeat content a lot. Well, a Squarespace website lets you connect your major social and multimedia accounts to your website in just a few clicks, whether that's icons or direct links or embedded feeds. And then you only need to update content where you need it. And then you have a central hub where everyone can find it without bugging you for it.
And Squarespace's design intelligence with its cutting-edge AI technology empowers you to unlock your strongest creative potential, helping you build a beautiful, more personalized website that's tailored to your unique needs. Something bespoke that you and the people you care about can be proud of.
Indubitably. Make that holiday family gathering an online one, too. You know, something that impresses and brings everyone together and closer this year. And all you have to do to get started is head on over to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use squarespace.com/legends and enter code legends to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hello, everyone. This is Matt Villeneuve. When I'm not listening to my children laugh at the ghosts in the house, I'm listening to Astonishing Legends. Now back to the show.
I want to ask you some specific questions about some of the stuff in there, some of the other folks you talked to. Like you mentioned earlier, Congressman Andre Carson from the House Intelligence Committee, he said, and I'm loosely quoting here, he said, "We want to encourage folks, give kudos to you," he was talking to you, "to keep pushing for more information and more answers. So we have a lot of work to do to remove the stigma." And I was thinking that, like, between the lines, this sounds like congressional members are saying, you know, we're up against something bigger than Congress here, and we can't do it alone. We need people to be a part of this, the people specifically. And people are folks like you who are making the kind of films you make, who ask the questions you ask. And, like, to me, it's like he's saying, we're out in the wind here. We need more support. And that's Congress. And they're looking for that support from you. It's like, who is in charge here? Who is it that we can't get past? Why is it that he needs help getting the answers to these questions, you think, from the public?
Well, remember what he said just prior to that?
I will when you say it. Yeah. What did
he say? So I read a quote from former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. I think it was in the New Yorker.
Yeah.
Might have been the New Yorker, where he talked about crash retrievals. I don't know if they mentioned bodies, but I definitely did. Uh-huh. But I quoted Senator Harry Reid about crash retrievals and the likelihood that we had them and that it was within Lockheed Martin.
Yes.
And I read that quote to him, and then I said, look, I'm not trying to put you on the spot here, but this is a game changer.
Right.
If we have bodies and craft, this is kind of a big deal. Again, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but what have you heard? And he paused, and he said, because of my oath to office and my connection to the committee, I can't talk about technology.
Right, right.
And I thought, okay, wow. He didn't say, oh, that's a preposterous accusation and that's just absurd and, you know, absolutely not. He didn't say that. He didn't say that. And then he went on to say, keep asking questions, basically.
Yeah.
So that spoke volumes to me.
Yeah.
You know, because remember during the first congressional hearing in 2022 with Andre Carson, that's when the memo came out, the Wilson-Davis memo. Mm-hmm. That talked about, you know, Admiral Wilson, who apparently according to the memo, discovered the crash retrieval program.
There's another person that you mentioned in a YouTube interview that you did. You were talking about Thomas Mannheim having names of the programs, names of personnel, all of that stuff.
That's what David Grush said.
Have you ever tried to reach out to him?
Nope. He's sitting ICIG. So
Well,
I mean, I've talked to folks like, how come you guys aren't asking him the questions, the people that can bring him in? And I'm not sure. I know that's the guy that needs to get pinned down. But remember, he's going to be stepping down from his position with the current administration. Right. So maybe we'll see what happens. But I'd like to get him testifying under oath.
Yeah.
And he, according to Grush, he's got the street address.
Right.
Well, that brings up a great question. I had read through that memo, and it was funny to see the two folks testifying, claiming, and maybe they had never heard of this. I only tripped on it because I think it was posted on X.
Kind of funny, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of funny that they're like, oh, I never heard of that. And like I said, you can't possibly know everything.
Of course not.
Yeah, I mean, there's Scott and I love films, but there's a bunch we haven't seen so or even heard of. And certainly we've never heard of the Jason Sands case. But that's a question here. I think one of the biggest ones when you're talking about disclosure is that, okay, who's really in charge here? Where is the real authority lying? And it's all upside down because then you have, well, as Rear Admiral Thomas Wilson was saying, is that, you know, Thomas walked up. Yeah, he walked up to the facility and he said, you know, I'm an admiral here. I have some authority. And they're like, no, this is a private facility. You cannot, you don't have access. And with no ways of going in, basically, he's not going to barge in there with a platoon of soldiers.
Well, eventually they did invite him in.
Yeah,
and eventually they told him they had a craft.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's the thing is like, who is, there is some authority that's on the private level. There's some on the governmental level, but the ones who are the real gatekeepers they're still a bit shadowy, but you know, they gotta be real people with families and people who know them and they go somewhere to work each day. How do we get at that directory level of to find out who's really got the keys to this stuff?
Okay. So this is something that I don't know how many people get this in the movie. Because I thought about it in retrospect. Maybe I made it a little too discreet. I should have really hammered this one. But do you know that formerly, I guess it would have been classified because he had to get Dobser approval, and that's Chris Mellon, of some correspondence he had with a high-level government employee official. He had found this alleged crash retrieval program, and specifically mentions the 1953 Kingman, Arizona case, in which case it landed, not crashed, landed, right?
Okay.
So that's all the names on that document have been redacted in the movie. But I know for a fact that unredacted version of that, I would call it a memo, correspondence, was provided to certain staff members and other people that are currently investigating. So they have the name, allegedly, they have the name of the gatekeeper as of a couple of years ago. Now, whether this individual has stepped down, but definitely still alive, no question of that. Yeah, the two individuals that found the crash retrieval program. And I'm told that if you are going to hide a crash retrieval program, you would do it unacknowledged special access program under DOE, because that's the least amount of oversight.
The DOE always comes up. It always comes up. And so there's a connection there because and this is one of the takeaways I got from the program. And it goes back to things that we learned. You know, one of the first things we covered when we started our show, you know, 10 years ago, and I can't remember how long ago this was, we covered Skinwalker Ranch, like 4 years before the TV series and all that stuff, based on the book. It was kind of a mind-blowing thing to us. Colin Kelleher, they came on in 22, him and Knapp, to talk about Skinwalkers at the Pentagon, which has sections in it about the idea of these evangelicals that are squashing things down, which you also mentioned in the program. I love that you brought that up. I have questions about that. But one of the things that it seems like is happening here is we're dealing with a corporate firewall, because you have a segment with Burchett saying, we can't call these private corporations in for congressional hearings. And he says, you know, there's quite a bit of separation there. And I'm sure if I was a better student of law and the Constitution, I would understand that. But what I don't understand is, like, it seems like then there's this relationship possibly with the Department of Energy. And then companies like, and the reason I brought up Skinwalker Ranch was because I was thinking about Robert Bigelow and Bigelow Aerospace that supposedly had material way back in the day. It's now been shut down. Where did that material go? Why did it shut down? Maybe it just went out of business for normal business reasons. But where did that material go? And then is that what Congress and even the president of the United States and these high-powered politicians in D.C., they can't get any further into it because it's Lockheed and Grumman and whoever, they're all on lockdown, and we just don't have any rights to get past that firewall, and then the DOE is controlling the classification level. Is that what's happening?
I remember the Gang of Eight, right?
Yeah.
That they are aware of the crash retrieval program, so I'm told.
Okay.
I know that Rubio, again, this is if my sources are reliable, that Rubio is aware of it. Rounds, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Gillibrand, I'm not totally sure, because it seems like she's really believing what Arrow's feeding her, and you know, particularly Sean Kirkpatrick. Like,
yeah,
thank you, Sean Kirkpatrick. Because of you, I got interviews in the movie as a sort of fallback position, because they knew that you were not going to be transparent with the testimony that they provided you.
Right.
So those individuals came and met with me just in case, and Sean Kirkpatrick completely, and they were just disgusted by it. Like, yeah, they'd gone in and risked everything to disclose this information to the head of Arrow, Sean Kirkpatrick, and he just blatantly lied about it all.
Right.
So they were very frustrated. A number of people that I met with were
part of the program. Same thing with the head of NASA, is that we'll be transparent if we find anything, but they're not telling you if they found anything or admitting to that.
How great was that? That I got to, you know,
yeah,
put that guy down.
I was
right. Wasn't that great?
Yeah.
I was so upset.
Yeah.
That he lambasted Grush the way he did.
I know.
What he should have said is, we take these allegations very seriously, particularly from an individual testifying under oath to, you know, a joint member of lawmakers, you know, open congressional hearing. We are currently investigating those claims, and we'll follow up with another press conference. That's what he should have said.
Yeah.
But what he said to me was a smear job. Like,
yeah.
I remember I was in that room going,
yeah.
And I said to myself, James, revenge is a platter best served cold. And I thought about how I was going to edit that segment together.
Yeah.
And I worked extra hard on that.
Yeah.
I did split screen. I did juxtaposition from his statements to the statements that were made by Grush under oath. Like,
yes.
How blatantly obvious that he was putting out complete bogus information.
Yeah. Yeah.
To try to smear this guy.
Yeah.
So I hope, David Grush, you're listening. I hope you know that I really tried to do you a solid.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We think you did. Yeah.
Now, and this is speculation. You're going to say, well, that's speculation. I don't know. I don't, because I know your position on these things, but like, one of the phrases that we've said on our show over the years, because we talk about all kinds of stuff, including UAP, but it's like, if you believe any of this at all. So here's my thing about, if you believe any of this at all, let's say, you know, there's crash retrieval. Let's say there's even cooperation with NHI, with non-human intelligence. Then the next question is this, the firewall of getting the information that would imply if these corporations are behind it and the security clearances, that it's more than just, there's a cooperation from the non-human intelligence to not tell us what's going on. They're in cahoots with corporations and defense contractors and perhaps a portion of the government. Whereas, because it seems like if they really wanted us to know, they could just do an end run. Like, you know, it's the craft on the White House lawn or whatever. It's like, why are they lining up behind the U.S. government or international defense contractors?
You know, I never believed in the allegation or claim that there was a landing at Holloman Air Force Base where contact was made. I don't know the exact year, but I'm going to guess 1964. And I was investigating Socorro, which took place just a stone's throw from White Sands, mm-hmm. Holloman, right? Socorro, New Mexico. That was a landing case, one of the best well-documented close encounters of the third kind in U.S. history. Brilliant case. And in the process of investigating that, I came upon some articles that were written by, and excuse me if I don't pronounce her name correctly, I think it was Coral Lorenzen with the UFO Bulletin out of, it was Arizona. And a really credible individual. I was like, look at this. Another landing at Holloman. Contact? Filmed? Really? So I started looking into that. And then, I'm not going to bore you guys with the details because we'd go on all night, but I started looking into that and I started thinking, maybe that happened. And if it did happen, if it did, then that would imply contact was made, communication with a non-human intelligence. Okay. Then I started thinking, gosh, you know, and this is over years, if they, whoever they are, really wanted to overtly reveal themselves, they just have to hover over a Macy's Day Parade or a Super Bowl and it's game over. They don't do that. They've done some pretty brazen things, right? I mean, look at Phoenix Lights.
Yeah.
Look at O'Hare Airport, and was it 2006?
And the airports in China just fairly recently, just this last year, yep. And over the White House in yep. Was it 57? Yeah, 52. Yeah.
And they had landing cases in the 50s, et cetera, but pretty brazen, right? I mean, let's face it. I mean, that mass sighting in Hudson Valley, you know, Phoenix. I mean, you know, they've done some pretty incredible things, Rua Zimbabwe. Right. But they don't overtly, unequivocally, beyond a shadow of doubt, do any kind of act, take any kind of action that would just send, that would just end it. Psh, done, right? So they must be in on it too.
Right.
How else could you conclude? If you believe the phenomenon's real, then you'd have to come to the conclusion that they're in on the secrecy as well.
Right. So, and what's the reason for that?
If there's one thing that I've learned in this field is, as outlandish and crazy as something sounds, don't just have that knee-jerk reaction that I've had for decades and just say, that's impossible, that didn't happen, it couldn't happen. That's one thing I've learned.
Yeah.
Suspend judgment. Listen to the testimony. One of the reasons why I reported on the Jason Sands encounter, it's like as unbelievable as it comes across. What if it happened?
Yeah.
What if it happened the way he said it happened? What if there are more people out there that will be encouraged to come forward because he has been brave enough to come forward?
Yeah.
He has told me that he'd be willing to take a polygraph publicly anytime. His credentials check out. I got his military records. That speaks volumes. Okay. Well, you're willing to put your neck out there, then I'm willing to put mine out there to report on this. And let's cross our fingers that, you know, that more credible evidence comes forward. And look, if it comes forward, people that were there that say it's absolute hogwash, we'll listen to that too.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. SpringHill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
4st and Scott, thank you for supporting their sponsors. I'm Aaron. Now, back to the show.
Well, speaking of something that is, I see it as believable and unbelievable at the same time, it is one of your subjects in the film that you interview is Gary McKinnon.
Yes.
He was the UK hacker who I think in the mid to late 90s, he had broken into a server at the Johnson Space Center. And Scott and I love this. It was downloading at 56 kilobytes per second this photo. I
can't believe it. When he mentioned that connection speed on your
dial-up modem,
right?
And he's just waiting for – and just imagine that anticipation is that –
He called it the gold dust.
That was
waiting for this gold dust to drop on my lap.
Yeah, because he'd found a photo, and as it's loading, it turns out to be some kind of, as he said, non-human craft or nothing that we had known about at the same time on the backdrop of the Earth, actually taken from space.
He wasn't even sure it was the Earth, though. He said there was cloud cover, but it was a planet. He said it was a planet.
Some kind of planet. And then, you know, what I'm thinking is that, okay.
Almost went to jail for life.
Yeah. And they can do that. And that's their leverage because at some point, I understand that.
I waited 20 years to get him.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I got to meet that guy. I remember when it happened.
Yeah. When you see, you know, this story and you hear about the photo and he's recreating it from a drawing and it's like, okay. It's a UFO. It's shiny and it's pill shaped and this and that. But one thing that had come up in connection to a story online and in social media is that this is the even more mind-blowing thing to me that's also potentially probable, is that he claimed that he tripped onto some documents that had an inventory of materiel list from the United States Space Force of various ships that were in their inventory. And it would be things like, okay, you have a cargo ship, maybe something like the space shuttle, but then it was listing things like fighters and destroyers and carriers that are part of the United States Space Force, not the Navy. We're talking about spaceships here that were in the inventory and apparently connected to Gary. And have you heard that or did you ask him about that?
No, what I heard, and I'm not saying it didn't happen, what came up with him and me is the non-terrestrial officers.
Oh, right, the officers, yeah.
Yeah, non-terrestrial officers, a list of non-terrestrial officers. And he was lamenting on the fact that he couldn't remember that he should have written them down or that he couldn't remember them. Wicked smart guy. Remember when he was describing like how he hacked into the systems and he's like, oh, it's quite forward. Just did this. And he just like explained kind of what he did 20 whatever years ago. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I couldn't do that if my life depended on it. What the hell? This guy is so smart.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, it's quite straightforward, really. You know, it's just
it lends a bit of believability because he is so straightforward about it, and was so affected by the ordeal and like, God, what have I done? You know,
maintained the story for over 20 years, faced life in prison.
Well, why do you think Theresa May chose not to extradite him to the U.S.?
Well, you know, I thought about that quite a bit, and there's a part of me that's going, well, wait a minute. The Brits went along with weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, knowing perfectly well that was probably hogwash. They went along with that.
Yeah.
But they didn't go along when the United States requested extradition and they said no. Or is it that it was sort of a tacit agreement that they didn't want a big circus media to reveal what the U.S. government has hiding, the details of this guy, the biggest hack in U.S. history, apparently, at the time.
Yeah.
You know, revealing what he found.
Better if the story goes away.
I mean, I don't know. That seems to make sense to me.
Kind of what I'm getting at is that, okay, so you have some guy claiming he saw a photo of a UFO. That's not such a big deal nowadays. And we're like, all right, let's move along. But when you claim to have seen some document evidence that not only do we have a crash retrieval program, but perhaps we've built some of these things for our own use and defense. What are we defending ourselves against? What's the scope of this? Where is it? Who's paying for it? Well, obviously the taxpayers are paying for all this, but what, you know, that's even more unbelievable that we have our own ships that are interstellar perhaps or space capable that, that are military.
I got to tell you, I am super on the fence when it comes to that because I've heard some testimony that's led me to believe maybe that's the case. I've heard other testimony from people that I really trust that told me, no, we think we know how it works, but we haven't figured it out. So until I've met someone that I believe that has been part of or seen, I'm on the fence with that. Again, I'm not going to make a judgment one way or the other because I just haven't seen or heard the testimony needed to persuade me that we have managed to reverse engineer successfully. Now, a lot of people can argue with me about that, and that's fine. And I'm not saying that it's not true. I'm just saying that I haven't seen enough evidence to sway me as to thinking that it is true. And again, I'm going to maintain a neutral position on that because I don't know.
That brings to mind something that, you know, the position that you're in now, and it seems like something that's happened in the past to people who document the kind of things that you're documenting is you might have to worry at this point. And I wonder if you've thought about this, about getting catfished, about getting roped into something. Let's say now you're like, oh, you're next. You know what? We're going to decide what Mr. Fox's next project is. And it's going to be about all of the Space Force ships and officers. And we're going to have a bunch of people come forward and convince him all this stuff. And we're going to back them up and give them dossiers. And it's going to be a psyop. And he's going to make a whole film. And when it gets done, we're going to out it as completely bogus and fake and ruin his credibility. Do you worry about that kind of thing?
I've been at this 30 years. Like, the reason why I report on what I report on is because of my field research.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't line up with my, I'd be like, you know what? I need to see more. I need to.
Good.
Now, if they take me in and show me one of these fuckers, and I take a little ride, sure, I'll tell you about it. I'll be transparent. Yeah, you don't believe me? Well, hey, I saw it with my own eyes.
Right.
Then I might be willing to do it. But if they just give me some documents, no, that ain't going to happen. Yeah, and even if I'm given some footage, I would be highly dubious of it.
Yeah, well, at this point, it's getting crazy. I'm following.
I don't trust anyone.
Yeah,
really,
and I'm following the AI revolution pretty closely. And now that it's venturing in text to video and all of that stuff, it's getting pretty wild.
It really is. I mean, how are we going to know fact from fiction? And, you know, that's why it's all about provenance, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
and chain of custody.
Scott and I were just talking about a lot of the paranormal in general, and all this stuff is based on your gut instinct, I think, and who are you going to trust? You know, who's telling you something is misinformation? How do we know? And you're just going to have to decide for yourselves, and you're going to have to do your own research and come to your own conclusions. But because, like, at some point, AI and, you know, who's on the phone asking you for gift cards, is you're going to have a gut instinct. And I think it's often trustworthy of, like, this doesn't seem right to me. And I think that's fine and it's fair. But I was going to ask about the connection to this end game here about, have you found any kind of alien agenda, or why are they doing this? What's the purpose? Where are they going from here? And what do they want? I think that's after we establish that, yeah, there's junk and then there's bodies, there's EBEs. What's the point here? And what do we have to be worried about? Have you come to any kind of thinking or ideas about some kind of agenda here?
You know, I kind of have my own agenda in the sense that I feel like I found the case that could settle this debate once and for all, and that's Varginha.
Yeah.
I'm going back to Brazil. I've got some leads on stuff that I really want to follow up on. I feel like that case, 1996, you know, a lot of people in the town, there's American involvement. I think that's a really good case that we should zero in on. I think see what we can come up with on that particular case. And quite honestly, we don't really have a choice. I mean, other than to support the current effort, bipartisan effort, to really dig deeper on what they know. I mean, look at what's come out in the last 3-4 years.
Yeah.
It's quite remarkable, even though we all feel like maybe it's not happening quick enough, or we're concerned about disinformation or psyops. Like, I think there are real, legitimate folks on the inside that know it's time to just come out.
Right.
People have a right to know. And just because someone works for Arrow or someone works for the FBI or the CIA or NSA, these are still people. They're still human beings. And some of them are good and some of them not so much, you know? But I mean, heck, I got to meet the head of Arrow just a couple of weeks ago while I was in DC.
Right.
John Kowalski. There was another gentleman in the room. He was Air Force Office of Special Investigations, AFOSI, and Kevin Ryan, was it Kevin Ryan? Anyway, and I said, you know, you guys got to throw us a bone here. And they were kind of quiet, you know, and I said, because you know, at the end of the day, that the vast majority can be explained away in conventional terms, but there's that residual 10-15%.
Yeah.
Probably NHI, you know, they didn't disagree. And I said, you know, and we're not going away. You guys, you know, I literally said, throw us a bone. Yeah. And he goes, John Kosklowski, and he said, you can quote me on this. He said, I can't part my hair. This is just a couple weeks ago. I can't part my hair without DOD approval. And you can quote me on that. So basically what he's saying is my hands are tied. Even if I want to tell you what I've found out.
Right. So that's my question. Who are these people that are making, you know, that are above Congress?
Ain't that the $1 million question?
Yeah.
Ain't that the $1 million question?
And what is their goal?
There is something, there is, maybe that's that 20 people who have the big picture, and they, it's not the president who, and every president always jokes, I don't have enough clearance, high enough for, to learn about this stuff. I think they're told some things and they're given a briefing, but even they're not, in, like, there's somebody who's really in charge with everything, holding all the marbles, holding all the keys. They've just entrenched themselves. And because this is the most powerful information, the most transformational knowledge on this planet and in the galaxy, in the universe, this and that, and they're in control of the little amount that we may have.
You know, it makes me think of the time when I got a brief interview over the phone with Gerald Ford, President Ford. And it's really funny, actually, because I had this roommate, and he was a kind of a computer nerd. He worked for IBM. He was 20 years older than me, and I loved the guy, was very supportive and really into UFO phenomenon. But he didn't, like, have all the luck with the ladies. So he said to me when we moved in together, he goes, if I'm ever in the hot tub with a woman, don't you come, you leave me, like, this is... I don't care if my house is on fire.
Yeah.
I don't care if my house is on fire. I'm in the hot tub with a woman. That's like, you know, so I was like, okay. He goes, that was like the main rule that he was real serious about. So I get this phone call from Penny Circle, the handler for President Ford. And she said, James Fox? I said, yeah, this is Penny Circle. The president's ready to speak with you. Well, I've been trying for months to get me an interview, but I had no idea. It was completely out of the blue. It was like, oh my gosh. I'm not ready. I need a recording device. She said, well, how much time do you need? I said, can you give me 10 minutes? She said, okay, I'll ask the press, you know. So, all right, I have 10 minutes. Lo and behold, my partner, my buddy, is in the hot tub with a lady. I'm like, oh my God. I go out there. I was like knocking on the door. He's out on the patio. He looked at me like he wanted to kill me. Right? Well, he goes, what did I tell you when I'm in the hot tub? I said, President Ford wants to give me an interview in 10 minutes. He goes, what? I go, yes. He goes, he leaps out of the hot tub, soaking wet, goes out of the hot tub. He's running through the house and trying to help me find a recording device.
Oh, my God. That's
it was so funny. And it's so funny, man. I was like, this is really funny, you know? And so I get an interview and President Ford says, I will talk about my efforts when I was a congressman. You ask me anything during my presidency? No, that's off limits. Not going to happen. Don't ask me anything.
Wow.
God, why did he say that?
Yeah.
He's willing to talk about when he was congressman. Now he's president. Then I got a brief, like sort of ambushed Jimmy Carter in the late 90s. He's like talking about the presidential. When he was president, you said you'd look into this. And he's like, well, we looked into it. We weren't happy with the answers we were getting. Gosh, really? Were they debrief? What happened? Then I interviewed John Podesta about Clinton. Mm-hmm. And he said the same thing. They were inquiring about Roswell. Sheila Widnall, Secretary of the Air Force, and they were making inquiries and they weren't happy with the answers they were getting. Then I interviewed the former governor of New Mexico, Bill Richardson. And he said that he goes, yeah, you know, I'm the governor of New Mexico. You think I have a little weight? Nope. They just pushed me around like nothing. Uh-uh. It just gets you kind of thinking like, what are they told?
Yeah.
What are they not told? What are they told? I mean, clearly they suspect something's going on because they're asking questions. The president of the United States is getting told what they can and cannot know, or that they're intimidated. It kind of makes you wonder, right? There's a pattern here.
What if the NHI are in charge of the
information? You know, again, as crazy as everything sounds, I suspend judgment. I'm open to listening to anything. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? But I think there's a preponderance of evidence, you know, with all the various testimonies that the president, I don't know since when, is just either not read in, definitely probably not read in, told none of your, you don't have a need to know, who knows? Hmm. Look, if such a program existed and it was unacknowledged special access program, completely off the books, I wouldn't want to, I'm just saying if it did, I personally wouldn't want to have to brief a president who's coming in for 4 years, maybe 8 at the most.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's going to be a civilian again?
Yeah.
You're going to debrief him in the last 80 years? of stuff. And by the way, we've got this, this, that, and the other thing. And then in 4 years or 8 years, you're going to be back as a civilian. I don't know. Makes sense not to tell them, don't you think?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's just that the less people that know, the better. And they're not involved with, they start asking, they get one answer to a question, they're going to start asking for more answers. And I think it's just operationally more sound. But as far as legacy, we're talking generations of people now. People have retired out, passed away. Young people have come in. It's an ongoing thing in keeping the biggest secret in the world. And what is the end goal here? Obviously, it's technology. And, you know, as we've heard, and I think even Dr. Stephen Greer is saying that another controversial figure, that you're talking about blowback and anger about technology that could have been saving lives, curing cancer 50, 60, 70 years ago, perhaps, and solving the world's energy problems. And you're sitting on this because there is a military application to it, which controls the world and its power and even our own survival. And so I get why they're not even going to want to admit to it's. Yeah, it's like having nuclear weapons. We don't need to know how the bomb is made, but just let us know that it exists.
Or if it falls into the wrong hands, you know.
Right.
I mean, certainly the witnesses that I've talked to that observed the technology, I mean, it flies rings around our jets. I mean, it makes a mockery of our fastest jets.
Right. At that point, you're the ultimate power. The ultimate.
It would be the ultimate power. If you could strap a nuke on that thing, game over, man.
Yeah. Yeah, you're quoting Bill Paxton there. Game over, man. Right, we're toast.
Whatever anyone thinks of Donald Trump, I mean, that administration, we got Ratcliffe. Yeah. We got Rubio. Yeah. I think he even said on Rogan recently that he would be willing to, you know, unearth some of the documents, some of the files.
They'll let him.
I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I know that Burchett said he was going to definitely bend his ear and push hard. Mm-hmm. And they've got control of the House and they'll have control of the Senate and the executive branch. So we'll see what happens.
Well, one thing that I was surprised to see is a connection to Dr. Halaputov and Lance Mungia. And so how we know them from, and it's funny, like you can talk about pale blue aliens and a lot of our listeners are like, okay, sure, maybe not, who knows, just kind of dismiss it. But when we start talking about consciousness studies and psychic ability, that's when we get the blowback and that's when we get the pushback, like, no, that psychic ability, no, you guys are nuts. That is not a thing. And the connection to remote viewing, even me saying that is going to get the ire of a lot of our listeners. Is there any kind of connection that you've seen to this phenomenon? And something involving consciousness.
So, okay, this happened to me, and I've got two witnesses. When I was making Out of the Blue, we were on a third floor apartment overlooking, I'm trying to remember the name of the park, in San Francisco. I had two producers. I had Boris Zuboff, co-producers, and Tim Coleman. Tim Coleman was the British guy that told me about Virginia, I told you about. And we were making some editorial decisions on the looks of something in Out of the Blue. And I was like, we need to tone it down. It needs more serious. Think of like 60 Minutes kind of style. And Tim felt differently and he wanted to put some more pizzazz in. And we argued about it. Ultimately, I had the definitive say because I was the director. And I said, I'm overriding you here. And he really got ticked off. He was 10 years my senior. And he was like, he was really irritated. And he stormed out of the apartment. And Boris and I carried on working. Well, maybe 10 or 12 minutes after that, I got this vision. I saw where my car was parked. I saw him with a key, and I saw it like a film strip in my head, him dragging the key along the right front quarter panel of my car. I saw it so clear as day that I didn't even need to walk out onto the patio on the third floor and look down below and see it. I just knew it. Carried on for another 6, 7, 8 hours, left. When I walked downstairs, there, exactly where I saw it, is a key mark all the way down the right front quarter panel, just like I saw it, okay? So I called Tim. You can ask him about this. He'd happily tell you. And I said, Tim, I know you keyed my car. And he vehemently denied it. And he was saying, how dare you accuse me of such a thing? I bloody well demand you take back. You retract that statement. And I said, Tim, I know you did it. And I'm okay with that. In the heat of the moment, you're upset. When you've come to terms with that, you can, I demand, blah, 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 and click. And 5 days later, whatever, he called me up and he goes, you know, you're a psychic. How did you know? And I told him, I said, I saw it. I saw it. How do you explain that?
Yeah.
How do you explain that? That image just popped into my mind. I told Hal Putoff about it.
Yeah.
I said, I didn't believe in it or not believe in it, but that happened to me. I've got two other witnesses to confirm that that happened, that I saw that.
He's not going to try to keep any secrets from you moving forward.
I was so certain of it at the time. I remember I didn't even need the confirmation of walking out on the balcony and looking down below and seeing it. And how do you explain that?
Yeah. A couple of quick final questions. We'll let you go because we know you got to
go. I'm going to go read to my son.
Yes, go read to your son. That's going to be great. One observation. Firstly, I want to say in moment of contact, your eyewitness, when you got him out to the crash site, I don't know how anyone could ever watch that and not believe that that person had an experience
there. Carlos
yes,
De Souza.
Yes. Unbelievable. That changed, or not changed, but it brought home the reality.
He deserves
of that.
An Academy Award if he's lying.
Yeah, exactly. And there's just no way that he didn't witness what he thought was a crashed craft there. It's an amazing capture. With the Calvine photo, did you go out to where the picture was supposedly taken? Is the barbed wire fence still there? Or
Yes.
So you could you could take a new shot and have it be very similar.
I took that shot. I have it in my phone.
Oh, you do? I would love to see that. Yeah, will you share that with us?
Okay. I'll send it to you. Yes, okay. Of course.
One of my final questions is Peter Coyote super cool? And does he believe in aliens?
Yeah. So Peter was friends with a guy who wrote a book called Friends in High Places. He was part of the Clinton administration. I actually interviewed him as part of Out of the Blue as well. Uh-huh. Peter had said to me, you know, my friend wrote this book, and he said that a couple of things that Clinton said when he appointed him was that I need you to go digging for two things. One, who killed JFK? And two, are there UFOs? Yeah. Webster Hubble?
Oh, yeah. I think Webb his name? Hubble. Yeah.
Webb Hubble?
Yeah.
He wrote Friends in High Places. You can check it out. He quotes it in the book. I actually got him on the phone and interviewed him. I don't know what happened to that guy, but that was like 24 years ago. He's got to be in his 80s now, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Everybody's getting older.
Everybody is.
Well, that's why we need a new generation to pick up the mantle here, the torch, and carry on and keep asking questions and produce great content.
Jesse Michaels is doing an amazing job.
American Alchemy? Yeah.
Have you seen his show? He really does deep dives.
Okay.
He's a smart
check
guy.
It out. All right. What's your next project?
I'm going back to Brazil in 3-4 weeks.
Okay, excellent.
Doing that, I'm going to revamp Moment of Contact.
Okay.
Then I'm thinking about doing an event at the National Press Club, quite similar to what I did in 2007 with Leslie Kane.
Oh, great. That's great.
And then filming that and then putting that out. And then I'll probably do a sequel to The Program.
Okay.
And then I'll probably take a year off.
You'll be entitled at that point.
Yeah.
Speaking of the next generation and where we go from here, I was going to ask you, it's one of my final questions here. Now there's kind of a famous YouTube video here, your UFO debate with Destiny, Michael Shermer, Daniel Pinchbeck, Bill Ottman. We'll have a link to that, of course, in our show notes. But it's produced by the Minds Podcast. And in it, about halfway through, about an hour, you have an exchange with Destiny, again, who's kind of become known for more political I think punditry. I think he represents a lot of the attitude in that, we haven't seen much. It's just not impressive. I get it. It's a big story. But until I see something, I just don't care that much about it or that much to dig into it. And you'd made a good point of like, well, I have. And so what I'm telling you is that the cat's out of the bag. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube and all those sayings. In that now that the first drips of some kind of disclosure have been,
when did I do that?
That was July 23. July 23. Have you collected on the bet?
Yeah.
It would have had to have been July 24, I think. Yeah.
Oh.
It was posted July 28th. So, July 28th, 2023.
Didn't I say something a little rude to him?
No, I didn't. Well, no,
you were
I don't
very
think it was
direct. You were very much like how many high-ranking military officials have you interviewed? How many? Yeah.
I think you have to
who
be
have
direct
you talked
because,
to was the
yeah. And the thing is, if you haven't, then what you're going on, and this is maybe talking about that gut feeling, but without the research on it, is that it's speculation about the motives of whatever this phenomenon is and the beings behind it and what do they want and what are they doing this and what are how are we going to react? You're just thinking like, well, that's not going to happen. I haven't seen it. And I don't think they'd be crashing, which is like, and you made a good point. Maybe we're shooting them down. I've heard that as well. But you're putting your application of your everyday life and logic to something that is beyond that. And it's just not going to fit, I don't think. It's not going to work well. And so that was your point. I think it was very well made and direct, polite, but forceful. And just saying like, I have looked into this and I can tell you that this thing is building up steam. And so you made a bet for $1,000 that I think within a year, some kind of disclosure more so was going to happen. And so whatever happened with that?
Gosh, that's a good question. Was that before David Grush or after?
Well, when was the first hearing with Grush?
Was that late July or?
Well, the first, I think, congressional hearing was it May 17th, 2022?
Here we go. Live July 26th, 23.
Okay, so then Grush would have come on after that talk, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, that was a pretty big one right there.
Yeah, I think so.
I think you might need to collect.
Oh, good. I could use $1,000 right now.
Right. Yeah. Progressing with that, what's your view on what we're going to be getting next? Because that's one thing that kind of stuck with me that you said is that just hold on. There's going to be better photos, higher res images, video clips. Our minds are going to start to be blown even more. What do you feel about that and going forward from this moment?
You know, it's hard to make predictions, but if you look at the trend, we're leaning in that direction for sure. I'd like to think that the program is going to, you know, look, there's been a lot of things that happened. We've got congressional hearings, we've got different podcasts, we've got Rogan, we've got you guys, we got the program coming out and all the accusations that are made in that, credible ones, mind you. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I think it'll be pretty apparent to those who watch it that the much more compelling data is hidden behind closed doors. I think we make a pretty good case on that. So the hunt is on, you know, and it's just a matter of time. And, you know, you say these things are on the brink, but provenance matters. So we're going to have to really, you know, because I remember when the Calvine UFO thing came out and people were like, oh, reflection and this, you know. But when you get the background story to it, the people that were there and investigated the case and interviewed the witnesses and that sort of thing, it's far more compelling.
Did you get those two chefs' real names?
Yes.
You did. Are you tracking on that at all? Or?
I'm working on that. Yeah.
Okay, good. That's good. I hope you are.
I got both their names. Yes.
Well, we're going to let you go. You've been so generous with your time. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find the program, how they can watch it?
So it'll be out on the 16th of December on Amazon, iTunes, Apple TV, Vimeo. And it will be available to buy only for the first 2 weeks. And it's going to be $19.99, which is expensive, and I know that. So anyone out there that can afford it and want to support it, great. If you cannot, wait a couple of weeks. It'll be out for rental for much cheaper.
I'm telling you what, I'm going to buy it. I'm still watching Moment of Contact over and over. I'm excited. Folks, that's just 2 days after this episode is posting. So if you're hearing this now, and a lot of people, it takes them a few days to hear our show, so it might already be out by the time you hear it. Go and check this out. It's going to be your favorite Christmas movie, I think.
It's the most independent film I've ever done. We don't have a distributor. We're financing. I borrowed $250,000 to release it, to pay for all the trailer and the PR firm, the ad space, just all that stuff adds up.
Well, we hope our audience will come out and support you because you deserve it. The work you're doing is critical. And we also hope that you'll come back on the show with us and keep us informed because we you're a great guest and we'd love to have you back anytime that you want to
get out. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. I really do. Thanks for having me on.
And that wraps up episode 299 of Astonishing Legends. Don't miss our next show on December 23rd, 2024. It's our 300th episode and the 5th Astonishing All-Star Holiday Special. Join us and our returning guests, Paul Gledhill, Micah Hanks, Jim Harold, Richard Haddam, Allison Joynland, Tess Feifel, Ed Vicola, Chris Kalari, and Miranda Merrick for our traditional but not so traditional annual party.
If you are a regular Astonishing Legends listener, you already know about our weekly show, The Astonishing Dead Letter Office, which is part of our main feed. But that's just the start. Be sure to check out the other great shows in the Astonishing Legends Network, like The Midnight Library, Scared All the Time, and Richard Haddam's Paranormal Bookshelf. They are all very different from Astonishing Legends and each other, but at the same time, part of our network's shared collective vision.
You can find links to them in all of our episode notes. Astonishing Legends is edited by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. Our co-producer is Tess Feifel, who also leads our research efforts and manages our social media. And we're grateful for the hard work of our technical producer, Ed Vacola, behind the scenes. Special thanks to our announcer, John Boland, for lending his voice to our shows.
Hi.
Hello, everyone.
E-R-I-N.
This is Matt Villeneuve.
And for the record, and per your instructions on the website, my name is Marty White.
LaCroix. LaCroix.
Now back to the show.
Our theme, which is available as a ringtone, was composed by Judson Crane at foundermusic.com. All other music and sound design for the show is composed and created by Alan Carestia.
Our logo was created by Tommy Beaver Design, and our animated graphics for social media and YouTube are done by Joshua Sloan at deadstreetproductions.com.
Many episodes have transcripts available. For ones that don't, you can request them by emailing transcripts@astonishinglegends.com.
Astonishing Legends would not be possible without you, our listeners. Visit our store at astonishinglegends.com or interact with us and other listeners on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, Discord, and YouTube.
You can also visit us at patreon.com/astonishinglegends, where patrons have access to commercial-free versions of both the main show and the Dead Letter Office, as well as additional bonus content, including the Patreon-exclusive show, The Astonishing Junk Drawer. If you're new to Patreon, you can save money by signing up on the web through a browser or using an Android device rather than Apple's App Store, where Apple charges a 30% markup on signups through iOS. No part of this show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.
Good night.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com. Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This is Eva Longoria from Hungry for History with Eva Longoria and Maite Gomez-Rejon. Like the song says, it's the most wonderful time of the year, and also a wonderfully busy one. All that merriment can weigh down even Santa's sleigh. So keep it wonderful by keeping yourself wonderful with a crisp, cold Coca-Cola. Ah, pause for fizzy joy. Look out for yourself, and then look out for everyone else. And together, we'll make this season as wonderful as it's meant to be. Enjoy a Coca-Cola. Refresh your holidays.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. It matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community. because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.